Then there are certain things which are gray. I mean, let's say someone says, I have a need to feel loved. Is it a need?
Yeah, like, I think so.
You can live without feeling loved, but it's
you can live and the relationship can't live.
Okay, so then let's say I say that this, you doing this makes me not feel loved, so therefore it becomes a need.
Well, that's something to think about. And if there's a conflict of needs, then it becomes a problem, right?
You are listening to The JP Show,
where we discuss the issues you care about from a Jewish perspective.
I am Rabbi G.
And I am Rabbi Levy.
And we hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome back, everyone, to another JP Show. I'm here with Rabbi Levy.
Welcome, everyone.
And I'm actually not exactly sure what we're going to discuss today, but he knows. But before we start, wherever you're listening to this, if you can subscribe, maybe leave a review, and enjoy the show. So how are you doing, Rabbi Levy?
Doing great. A little tired and cold. As you can see, we're both wearing jumpers.
The winter is like really...
It's raining and it's a little bit depressing, but it's all right. It's all good.
September. It's supposed to be spring next week or something. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Well, not next week. I don't know. Yeah, whenever.
So we're like a little bit of an in-between time at the moment. Although there's a very special time coming up, which we'll discuss in the coming weeks. There's the month of Elul, and then there's Rosh Hashanah, and Kippur, and Sukkot, and sort of heading towards that season. But this week is sort of like a in-between stage. So we have no festival particularly to talk about or any particular event. So I thought we'd just go to just like a random topic. Right? Sorry?
It's like downtime, is it?
Yeah, a little bit before the...
We don't really have downtime in Judaism, do we?
No, there's no such thing as downtime. It's okay. We're always up and we're always doing things. So I thought we'll talk about just sort of a topic which applies every day of the year, and that is relationships. Relationships, I guess all relationships. Let's focus on specifically marriage. But you can apply that to anyone, I guess. And I thought I'll put you on the spot here and just talk about, in your view, and maybe in the Jewish view, which hopefully is the same thing, what are the top three things that make a relationship work? And perhaps, I don't know if this could be the same thing or three other things that destroy a relationship, which it may be the same three things, just the opposite, or maybe totally different. And we can just briefly touch upon all three.
Okay.
Well, actually, I was interested in adding one more detail to it. I don't know if this is even relevant or true. Obviously, we're in very different stage. I mean, I'm not newly married by any stretch of the imagination.
Not
what it feels like. But I mean,
not with six kids and one set of twins. You're gone.
That's right. So I don't know if we're newly married, but definitely married less than you. We know a lot of people that are newly married. You've done a few weddings recently. You're going to do a few weddings soon. So when you go through these things, it's interesting to point out that there's a difference between the beginning of marriage and sort of 30 years, 40 years down the line. And if it actually makes a difference in emphasis and what you should emphasize and yeah, just thought a
really interesting question.
Okay. A thought that came to me
first. So I guess you're asking me because I'm coming up in a few years to 40 years.
Be this year 37.
This coming anniversary will be 38, actually.
Wow.
Well, three things. So I don't know if they're in an exact order, but they're all linked.
Okay.
I mean, when you said the top three things, I'm going to talk about three things other than love.
Okay.
Because love obviously is a constant in a marriage, or should be, expressed in different ways at different times, but it's a constant. Love is important. Expression of love is important. And fueling the love is really, really important. So, you know, in whatever form that takes, spending time, intimacy, doing nice things together, all these things, saying nice things, all that stuff, right? So love is really important, and love really is the building of a relationship, is the building of a marriage. But love doesn't work unless there are the three things. I'm going to put into three things because you asked for three. So it's
to make a four if you really want to.
No, it's not like a, you know, an ironclad halakha or something. There's three.
That's right.
But you asked for three. I think the first thing is, and I think that's part of the problem nowadays, and they're all linked. first few things is not to take yourself so seriously. What I'm still working on that. What do I mean by that? You know, in a marriage, on every relationship really, but in a marriage, there will always be differences, right? There'll also be conflict of needs, right? Which you have to work out, and you have to either compromise or find a different solution, an alternative way of doing things, and so on and so forth, right? Mm. That's just the nature of every marriage, no matter how good the marriage is. Just no two people are alike, and everyone does things differently. The problem is this, I think. I've kind of come to this recently, because just by watching and counseling and observing and so on. Concept is that there's a big difference between a need and a want. Right, a need is something you really can't, or you think, or apparently you can't live without, or it's like really, really, really important to you, right? And a want is something you want, but you could do without, right? And I think sometimes what happens is when people are a bit self-absorbed, which is very common today, by the way, we live in a sort of me world a bit, then every want becomes a need. Like, I feel unsafe, and I feel rattled, and I feel insecure, and I feel emotionally irregulated, or whatever the case is, if I don't get what I want, right? So a very, very important aspect of marriage, of every relationship really, is what we call in Hasidic terminology, bittul. In other words, make space for someone else, i.e. don't take yourself so seriously.
Hey, you know, you're speaking about wants and needs. It's actually a very interesting subject.
Don't forget about that too. I got to get to, yeah?
Sorry, the other two. No, we'll get there for sure. The question is, sometimes, you know, speaking like a sort of a general example in life, right? Sometimes it's very hard to define the difference, right? So if I say to you, what is a need in order to, like, putting aside relationships for a second, what's a need in order to live? So technically, to live, you need air and you need food, right? Do you even need a house to live? No, you don't necessarily need a house to live. You can live in the streets, right? But everyone understands that a house is a need, right? It's considered a need, although it's not critical for your survival. Clothing, you could survive without clothing. I mean, maybe if it's freezing cold, you can't. But if it's normal weather, technically you could survive without clothing. It's just, it's not, you don't feel, it's not, you know, then you're an animal, you're not human if you're not walking around with clothing, right? So I guess in a marriage, like, you know, would you say, I mean, for example, right? Not being abused is a need. Okay, so that is sort of black and white. No, everyone understands that.
I wasn't even going that serious. I was talking about, first of all, you're talking about general life needs. I'm talking about even personal.
No. I'm sort of I'm bringing an analogy, right? So in the life of marriage, there are things which are absolutely critical. Literally, you cannot survive. The relationship can't survive if it's happening or not happening. Then there are certain things which are gray. I mean, let's say someone says, I have a need to feel loved. Is it a need?
Yeah, I think so.
You can live without feeling loved, but it's
you can live and the relationship can't live.
Okay, so then let's say I say that this, you doing this makes me not feel loved, so therefore it becomes a need.
Well, that's something to think about. And if there's a conflict of needs, then it becomes a problem, right? So for example, let's say, okay, I'll use your analogy. Let's say, I mean, I don't want to stereotype you, but let's say a woman says, I need to feel loved. And the man says, yeah, I know, but I just need my space. I need to be alone for a long time. That's a problem. So they're both going to, you know, so first of all, the wife has to understand the husband, so maybe not overwhelm him and not need constant attention or constant love, but also the guy needs to compromise a bit. He has to get out of himself a little bit and he has to find a way and learn how to express love and give time to love and invest in love, right? But it doesn't have to be that deep or that complicated. It could be anything. I mean, there's just certain things that people like really bother people. I don't know. for example, you might smile when you hear this, like certain people need a heater. Because they're very, very cold.
That's right.
Some people can't stand the heater because they're really very hot. Now, this is a physical personality thing, by the way. Right. It could be a real need. The guy could be someone could be really, really cold, and the other person could be really, really hot. I'm just saying, right? So you got to work it out. That's it. That's not taking yourself so seriously. That's just really like it's very hard to operate when you overheat.
So what's an example of something that people would consider a need that you would say it's not a need, it's just a want and get over yourself?
Some people like they, you know, would love when they come home to have supper ready. You know what I'm saying? To the point where it becomes a need and it's like a big disaster if it doesn't happen. You know what? It's not a need. It's a want. You want it. I understand that. It's nice. Some people like come back from the office or they're hungry, whatever the case is. I'm talking about from a man. I mean, I'm just saying because I'm giving an example, right? Yeah. You know what? If it's not ready, just get over yourself. Go take an apple or something, right? That didn't quite fit into your, didn't quite fit into your schedule, to your routine. You know, things are a bit late. Okay, so what? Some people have a want. They need things tidy. Okay, so in your room, tidy it up. In your space, tidy. Make it tidy. If it's not so tidy somewhere else, doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there are lots of things. Just today, everything becomes like a big issue because every want becomes a need. That's a big issue.
Mm.
I mean, you put me on the spot today, so I need a bit more time to think of examples, but I think it's pretty clear. I think everyone has their things that's really important to them. Really, really, really important. But not everything has to become really, really important.
Right. I think also maybe it has to do with something we've discussed in the past many times. Like, people tend to overthink things in general today. Like for example, like everything's a trigger and everything has to do with something that happened to me 30 years ago. So when you do that, like everything becomes a problem, right?
It all boils down to the one thing. Just don't take yourself so seriously.
Yeah.
It's not all about you.
Right.
Now, it's interesting because you actually, that has to be the foundation. On the other hand, I'm actually going to talk about this tonight at a Kayamet event, but on the other hand, you do need to be present. No one wants to be married to a no one.
Mm.
You got to be there, and you got to, you know, love is a presence. You got to be there. You got to be someone that's loving. You got to be someone that contributes, someone that brings innovation or creativity to the marriage. That's all true, but it's still got to be based on humility. Right?
Yeah. It's a hard one because, you know, there's sort of two opposites happening here at the same time. Like, you also don't want to be married to someone who has no needs at all. Because then, like, you have not, then you feel like you have nothing to provide for them.
It's married to a deadbeat. You want to be married to someone that's alive.
That's right.
So the topic of my talk tonight is called the paradox of relationships. And you're right. It is a paradox.
Right.
But with a bit of work, human beings can carry paradoxes. That's how it works.
Okay. So don't take yourself seriously. What's number two?
Respect. And don't be selfish. In other words, respect, treat the other person, value the other person as an individual.
Mm.
And understand their perspectives are different to yours and respect their individuality. Doesn't mean you always have to agree with them. That's okay, but you have to respect them, right? Don't undermine them, don't put them down, and don't dismiss their perspectives, their needs, their individual ways of doing things. It's not wrong or right, it's just different. And when that happens, because I said before, the glue of relationships is love, but love can be very selfish. So therefore, in order to show that there's selfless love, it has to be love that's not just there for your pleasure, but love that's there for the other person, making room for the other. And loving a person in the way they want to be loved, which, by the way, in turn comes back to you and it creates the best enjoyment and the best good feeling when you cater for the needs of someone else. It's an amazing thing, right? But the basis is, like, I want to love the other person, but I want to love them the way they want to be loved. I want to respect them the way they want to be respected. So, and obviously it's a two-way street, but that's a second really, really important thing, I would say. And the third is the ability to listen and notice. Listen and notice. Which is really how you express the first two. In other words, when you make room for someone else, you start to notice them, you notice their moods, you notice their needs, you notice their emotional feelings, and you can then communicate properly and effectively with respect. You can then have empathy. Empathy comes from noticing, picking up the nuances and picking up the feelings of other people. All these things are difficult, by the way. Number one, because we live in a world that's a very self-centered world. Number two, we live in a very fast-paced world. And number three, we stop noticing because we're looking at our phone too much. It's another thing.
Mm.
So we're a bit in our own world. All those things are well documented today, but we need to work with them because they won't work otherwise. So I think that's the, if you put me on the spot, those are the three things that come to mind right away.
That sounds great. So would you say, so just sort of another question here, going back to what I asked before, do any of these things, Are these things which are constant in marriage? Does this look different at the beginning and then 30 years later, or are they all the same?
So there's a honeymoon period, I think, in most marriages, unless it's a disaster from day one, which sometimes happens. But, you know, if you marry someone compatible and it was chemistry and you're working on it and you actually love them and they love you, most normal people, it's very, very beautiful in the beginning. But relationship takes practice. Now, it gets more beautiful if you work at it, right? It does get more beautiful. And it should get more beautiful all the time. But you do need to work at it. And then, of course, other things come into the marriage. It's not about time, by the way. I mean, it could be about time. I mean, time can bring monotony, but that's up to the people to put in the work to make sure it's not. If it's always important to bring newness and to be creative and to do fun things and spend time together and so on and so forth, right? But it's more than that. It's also things come into the marriage that can strengthen or weaken a marriage. People have different challenges. First of all, before you get to challenges, even blessings. Children, I mean, there are books about, I once gave a lecture on this. There are literally studies and books about marriage after children.
Right.
People change. People are more tired, even more worn out. You know, I don't know if there's any books about marriage after twins, but anyway, I'm assuming it's like double, you know.
Just double.
I mean, people are up at night. There's a lot to do. Your whole life changes. I mean, I'm sure you remember when you had your first baby. Just to get out of the house takes like four times as long than to when you didn't have children, right?
Mm.
So then there's much later challenges when children leave the house. And then suddenly you need to focus on each other. For some people, that's a challenge. Mm. For some people, actually, children is a bit of an escape. Like they've put their whole focus into their family, but actually not enough focus into each other, which is actually a problem. And it comes up later when suddenly they don't have any children at home, the empty nest they call it today, whatever it is. And then they got to suddenly just be with each other. And they're not used to that. So, of course, things change. But I think the fundamentals stay. The fundamentals are there all the time.
Yeah.
I think it's the same fundamentals, and they never change. They just have to be worked out a bit harder, a bit weaker, a bit stronger, but this, that, you know, just how you express them. But essentially, I think it's the ultimate foundations, right? By the way, when I said about not taking it all seriously, you know, in the Torah, by the way, it's a very Jewish principles, of course, this respect and you know, being humble and all that. But in the Torah, we know that that's the basis, because in the Torah, we know the famous thing. I think we've talked about this before, that in the Torah, actually, the first part of the Torah in Genesis, it doesn't actually talk about much the relationship between the Jewish people and God, but you find more stories of general relationships, like the marriages of our forefathers and mothers and so on, matriarchs and patriarchs, and just people getting married, people having families, just the establishment of the human race, right? And I think the commentaries point out that the reason for that is because ultimately in Exodus, in the second book of the Torah, we read about the relation between Jews and God, which was by Matan Torah, by the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. But actually, you can't have a relationship with God, actually, which is the point of Judaism, unless you actually have a regular relationship. If you're an arrogant person, you can't make room for another human being, where another human being is actually very much the same as you, just different. You certainly can't make room for a God that tells you what to do and guides your life, and the Torah has everything to say about everything that you do and live. So it's hard to make room for that. I mean, you might do it mechanically because you're used to that, but you don't have a relationship with God, right? So the principles are the same, really. I mean, it's a different type of relationship. It's not like equals, but a lot of the same principles.
All right, wonderful. See everyone back here next week.
Please God. Have a good week, everyone.